The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Do you or somebody you know hoard? You aren't alone. Hoarding affects millions of people throughout the world. You can do something about it and regain personal control. Welcome to Take Back Your Life When Your Things Are Taking Over with host Elaine Birchall. Reduce and relieve yourself from the shame and blame clutter causes in your life. You can do it, and we'll show you how. Now, here's your host, Elaine Birchall.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our third show. I'm Elaine Birchall, your host, and if you let me, your own personal clutter coach. And I'm here to help you take back your life when your things are taking over. I am so delighted to have this opportunity to be with you again and every Wednesday from 10 until 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 till 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Voice America's Variety Channel. Thank you for coming back and tuning into today's show. We have a great one for you, and it's great to have you back. I have great news. Dr. David Burns, the internationally acclaimed author of the book titled Feeling Good and the accompanying workbook 10 Days to Self-Esteem, has kindly agreed to be a guest on this show to give us the very best information on depression and anxiety and how to manage it in our lives. Also, Jane Burka, a PhD, who's written a book that's become my Bible on procrastination, has also generously agreed to be a guest on this show. Her book is called Procrastination: Why You Do It, What You Can Do About It Now. You might want to get these books if you're experiencing these issues in your life. These books are life changers, folks. You can reach us today in real time by calling our worldwide toll-free number 1-866-472-5788 or emailing us at elaine.birchall@hoarding.ca. We were going to try to go live today on Facebook, but we had some technical difficulties. We're going to start next week and overcome those difficulties right after the show. I'm really disappointed that I won't get to be in real time with people on Facebook. How did you do doing the quiz, Are You a Hoarder in the Making, that we previewed last week? What did you learn from it? Did you do the activities of daily living checklist? I hope both of those tools helped you in some way. Just a tiny recap for those people who weren't able to join us in the earlier show, so you know what we've covered, and you can go back and listen to the pre-recorded shows if the topic's of interest. In show number one, I told you about the emotions and the feelings behind excessive clutter. You know that accumulation that overwhelms people? It appears to be made up of things, but what really overwhelms people are the hurts, setbacks, and mistrusts and misunderstandings that add to their burden. Their path is actually blocked by both tangible and intangible things that get in the way. I work holistically, not just dealing with the possessions, but also the underlying factors like unidentified physical and mental health burdens, or maybe it's just simply not having the necessary practical resources, as well as those hurts, setbacks, and mistrusts. In show number two, we spoke with Jane about what hoarding feels like from the inside. And we discuss some real life realities that can make you even more vulnerable to hoarding disorder. Today, a little later on in the show, in segment two, we're going to talk to two women, Helen and Rebecca, about the legacy of growing up in a hoarded home. That legacy lives on after they leave home and helps them to make decisions about how they want to create their own independent lives. You know, I've been a hoarding behavior and intervention specialist for more than 14 years. So if you're listening today, and as you consider the environment you live in, consider many of the questions that I'm going to ask as we proceed through segment one. Remember, there are three criteria for something to be a hoarding situation. And to even a minimal extent, each of those criteria must exist for the situation you're looking at and deciding about to be a hoarding situation. First, there must be what most people would describe as excessive accumulation. And I like to say a failure to discard proportionately. Now, though that accumulation can be made up of things or animals or the combination. The second criteria is that your activities of daily life, you know, those activities that were listed on that quiz that I've posted on www.hoarding.ca under the radio program tab, those activities of daily life start to become impaired because the spaces themselves where the activities would normally play out, they can't be used for their intended purpose. The third criteria is somebody's upset or distressed, and the functioning has started to be impaired because of the condition and state of the environment. Or if somebody isn't actively upset and distressed, they would have cause to be concerned if they knew the truth about the condition of the property. So as we start, let me ask you these questions just to see whether maybe if you're looking around and you're seeing a buildup, it might have got this way because are you somebody who just loves a deal? Can't pass up a deal? Do you have too many deals arranged around in your environment now that have gotten ahead of you? Do you find alternative uses for practically everything? See the possibilities. You don't actually have the time or the project space to move forward with them. They're not on the radar anytime soon, but you're starting to accumulate product. Do you hold on to things because they remind you of people or memories, and it feels awful to let them go? Most people do that to some extent, but it's about the amount and the frequency that you use that belief system that might get you in trouble. Do you want to declutter, but you just can't make yourself do it? Don't miss our procrastination show with Jane Burka coming up in a few weeks. Would most people say that a buildup has occurred in your environment? If any of these questions are true, please stay tuned with us through the entire show today. So you hear two terms, hoarding and cluttering, but they're not the same. Okay, and they're used interchangeably, sometimes mistakenly. With a cluttering situation, people who would describe themselves as a clutterer, generally, they can discard their things more easily and make those decisions. Yes, it might build up a little bit, but it doesn't interfere with their life to the same extent. Now, here's the catch. Not everyone who clutters is going to go on to hoard. But every single person in more than 14 years working with people who hoard and those who love them have always said that when they ended up in a hoarded environment, it always started out as clutter. Do you remember the three types of hoarding behavior? They're called by various names. You might hear it called common hoarding. I call it standard hoarding because it meets the standard for hoarding disorder in the Diagnostic Manual of Mental Health Disorders, version 5. Did you remember Diogenes syndrome We're going to do a whole show on Diogenes and senior mental and physical health a little later on in the segment series. And animal hoarding, the third type of hoarding behavior. We are fortunate enough that Dr. Gary Patronick, the leading specialist in animal hoarding, has agreed to be a guest on this show. So we're going to get really detailed, really good quality information as we proceed through our shows. Today, we're going to talk about the forgotten children. Adult children who grew up in hoarded homes, many of whom say that they felt displaced and played second importance to the stuff. Helen and Rebecca will be with us in the second segment to talk about what it was like to grow up with so many piles and pathways, and what it took to create the information on hoarding, create the lives that they have today based on their experience. And I want to proceed in our segment one, by providing a little more good quality information on hoarding itself to help you understand both sides of the problem. When I look at all of the research, all of the people that I've helped over more than 14 years, all of the situations that have been brought to me by peers who I have trained all over the world, I see basically three paths to hoarding behavior. The first is genetics. We do know that there can be a genetic component to future development of hoarding disorder. The second pathway is having a high-risk comorbid condition. Now, comorbid is just a $5 word for other accompanying mental health or physical health conditions, or the combination that puts you at a higher risk. The third path is chronically overwhelmed and vulnerable. Those people who are never quite on top of things. They can't find their receipts for this, their car keys. Things get lost in minor piles, and then they become vulnerable. You have to know that path number three, most people can be, under the right conditions, susceptible to developing hoarding behavior when they become chronically overwhelmed and vulnerable. So let's look a little bit at the genetics of hoarding. We know that 84% of hoarders have a first-degree family relative who hoards. That's a mother, father, sister, or brother. We know that there are three chromosomes with markers in common. We don't know enough about that, though, to make it predictive so that it helps us pre-identify those people who would be more at risk. But we know that that does establish the fact that almost certainly there's a genetic component. And when there's a genetic component and the disorder plays out in real time in people's lives, the modeling behavior in families that teach people how to cope with things, how to be organized, also is a risk factor. Let's look at some of the risks for comorbid conditions. I'm just going to read you the list. Depression, anxiety, eating disorders, addictions, tics, Tourette's, autism, schizophrenia, dementia, personality disorders like obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, avoidant personality disorder, dependent personality disorder, paranoid personality disorder. So, also, we find people who become socially isolated, people with ADD and ADHD, dementia, Alzheimer's. Sometimes it's just aging with mobility issues. Sometimes traumatic life events cause hoarding to set in, make you more vulnerable. So that these are all ways that people become chronically overwhelmed and vulnerable. I hope some of my friends from Adult Children of Hoarders are able to tune in. So we're going to go to a break in just a few minutes, and then we're going to see you after the break. If your default behavior under sufficient stress is to fill the void by acquiring or saving things, or to shut down and stop processing things, you may be at risk for hoarding disorder. Do you stop processing the things that are made up in your everyday life? We're going to go to that break now, and when you come back, you're going to meet Helen and Rebecca. See you after the break.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
If the financial markets interest you, if you want to potentially earn a higher return, if you're not satisfied with your investment returns, or if you're only making 1% on your investments sitting in the bank, do you see the stock market hitting record highs but feel you have no one to trust? Voice America's own Jordan Kimmel, the host of Magnet Investing for over 7 years, is applying his strategies of Magnet Investing and is managing individual accounts. Jordan Kimmel has joined InvestView, the Red Bank, New Jersey investment education and asset management firm, and his team can help you. Contact Jordan and the team at InvestView at 732-380-7271 or by email at jkimmel@investview.com. If you would like a complimentary portfolio review or to speak to a representative, call us. Past performance of investments are not indicative of future results. Investing is inherently risky. All recommendations should be researched by the investor. Call InvestView at 732-380-7271. That's 732-380-7271. If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Take Back Your Life When Your Things Are Taking Over. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. If you prefer, send an email to elaine.birchall@hoarding.ca. Now back to this week's show.
Welcome back. So I'm going to introduce our guests today, Helen and Rebecca. But just before I start speaking to them and they start sharing with us, we have a caller, Al, who's been waiting for a little while on the phone. So maybe we could take Al's question.
Yes, hello. I was wondering, I have a sort of a theory of mine where I grew up in a hoarding environment, not necessarily hoarded, but with my mother being a clean freak, she managed to clean up after my dad, who was the hoarder. Does that make sense to you?
It does, absolutely, yes. Absolutely. So what's your question, Al?
I just wanted that confirmed more than anything else.
Absolutely.
Because my father, he had always had something on hand as a tool, and he would save things with the mantra, "It'll come in handy someday."
I've heard that a million times.
Sorry?
I've heard that a million times.
Oh, no kidding. And that was my mantra for a very, very long time. And so it was like when I started the cleaning up process, that was something else I had to learn. Because invariably, when you get rid of something, you're going to need it after. it's true, you do, but you don't need it that desperately to keep hanging on to it.
That's true. Sometimes you can hang on to it for a very, very long time. And as stuff builds up, and when it builds up enough, you can't find it anyway. So one of the things, this is a really important question, Al, because I hadn't thought to stress something that is very, very true. And that is, there are many hoarded environments that are being managed by a check and balance system within the family dynamic, where it could be a husband, it could be a wife, but there's an influence in usually the marriage, where it keeps things under control. And the person who is either acquiring, saving, or holding on to, not making the decisions to let things go when things start to build up, they tacitly agree. They still acquire, but there is that point at which, to save the relationship, to exist within the family, stay in the family, they make a trade-off, and that check and balance that the other person in the marriage is causing to happen keeps the environment safe enough and manageable enough. Thank you for reminding me to tell people about that, because there are many, many situations, and yours is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think my parents had another dynamic, too, where he wasn't physically abusive to her, but he was very controlling.
Okay.
And I think there was a certain aspect of that involved in her keeping, you know, clean behind him, kind of thing. So he probably got to keep more than he normally would.
Okay. How did that impact your life growing up, Al?
I never learned how to clean.
Okay.
You know, she was behind everybody and everything, you know, to clean up.
Do you think that was complicated by the fact that you're male? Was that her role in life as well? And then she did it kind of doubly because
they were immigrants, and so, you know, small town immigrants. So the, you know, the old patriarchy still exists.
Okay. Okay, well, listen, Al, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. I really appreciate it, because I might not have remembered to add that fact about there are situations that constitute hoarding that are active. They're actually happening, but they're being managed by a check and balance system.
Yeah, and they can look very clean.
They absolutely can, but here's what happens, and I think, you know, luckily perhaps this didn't have to happen in your family. When the person who is the check and balance disappears, either they get tired of constantly being responsible for the cleaning, or, you know, they get elderly or whatever, they pass away, that other situation very, very quickly goes out of control. And when that happens, and it's the man, I have to tell you that when I get a call from a man asking for help, first of all, men don't ask for help as easily as women.
Okay.
They are almost always, in fact, I have to say every case that has come to me is the worst of the worst of the worst situations. So it's very important that family kind of step in if that check and balance system disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Al. I really appreciate
you
taking the time. I'm happy to. That's what I'm here for. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. So we're going to meet Helen and Rebecca now. Helen and Rebecca, thank you so much for your willingness to be with us today and to share your experiences growing up with piles and pathways. The first question I wanted to ask each of you, maybe Helen, I could ask you first, and then Rebecca, you may have a different experience. So if you could tell me your take on it. Can you tell our listening audience what three words capture your growing up years?
For me, thank you very much again for inviting me. The three things that I would say would be insecurity, isolating, and confusing.
And can you tell me a little more about what those mean to you?
Yes. Isolating for me meant that because of the situation in my house, which was both my mother and father.
Both people hoarded?
Yes. My father hoarded differently. He collected cars and metal and tools, but it was often a sense, it was external to the house, so they were more visible to people. So we were usually teased about my father's hoarding more than my mother's hoarding, which was in the house. So we didn't, the isolating part came, we didn't have friends come over, we didn't have birthday parties, and we were kind of left with a knowledge that what was in the house, but we never spoke about it outside of the house. And you can't have close friendships when that's happening.
When you have to keep a secret?
Yeah, and you have to keep big secrets. And insecurity, well, insecurity kind of comes with all of the blow-ups around who was saying, who wasn't cleaning up, and there were always fights around the house about who was not doing their job properly. My mother would complain my father was spending too much money on the stuff he was bringing home for the yard, and he would be complaining because the dishes weren't done and the floor wasn't swept. So there were always insecurities around small children. And the confusion was that I didn't know that what they were, it was normal. So I didn't know what was abnormal. And so I only knew what was bad by what was said on the bus about laughing about my dad's stuff. But it was more not knowing what to say and who to say it to. And you can't draw in friends because you're afraid to say things. So it was very confusing for me. And I was an outspoken child, so I often got in trouble.
Yeah. So it wasn't really very safe when you don't know what the rules are and what to say and who to say it to and who not to.
Yes.
That's exactly. A big burden for a child to sort that out. That's a big burden for an adult.
And I think I have two siblings with myself, and each one of us dealt with it differently.
Okay.
My sister became very quiet and isolated. She didn't really talk too much at all. I was open and outspoken, and my brother tried to use humor, you know, to get around the idea of
so he was insecurity. A peacemaker, sort of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the one who called the elephant in the room.
Yes. And it didn't get me, it didn't prove to be any favors.
No.
In a lot of cases, I didn't do myself any favors. So.
No. Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Helen. Rebecca, how did it play out for you, those three words, and what were they?
I have to agree with what Helen said, but my three words were secrets, humiliation, and loneliness.
Okay. Can you tell me how those played out and what they meant for you?
The secrets, because as a child, you are holding in this huge secret that you don't want anybody to find out about because you don't know that it's wrong, but you know that other people's houses aren't like that. Humiliation came into play if, for example, a worker came to work at the house and he had to go work on the furnace and then he saw the conditions you were living in. Or if by chance a friend dropped by your house and they got a peek into the house. And loneliness came in because you couldn't have the same friendships as everybody else, where you go to their house, then they come to your house. So at one point, you lose friends because there's no back and forth exchange between the friendship.
Okay. And I guess you said before when we were talking about this that parents sometimes play into that too, because if it's always at their house,
mm-hmm.
it becomes a perceived burden. So
yeah.
You feel like, when's the clock ticking on this?
Yeah.
You know, how, and that must be very painful too, to have friendships and think, well, how long is this one going to last
exactly.
under these conditions? Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. The second question that I have, I will start with you, Helen, is how old were you when you left home and what caused you to leave?
My mother and father divorced, my mother and father divorced early. In my life in grade three. And after my mother left, my house became very, very, there were a lot of predators around because my dad had alcoholism as well as the hoarding
uh-huh.
thing. And so for me, I stayed at home until I was 14. My outspokenness always got me perhaps more attention than it should have. And so when I left my dad's when I was 14, I went to live with my mom, who was hoarding quite extensively through loss and emotional issues. And I couldn't stay there at all. So I was out on my own at 15.
Wow. What made it intolerable at mom's place? You said at dad's place, his alcoholism, of course, there are so many side effects of being an adult child of an alcoholic, not to mention hoarding on top of that. And we do know that alcoholism is a comorbid factor for hoarding. It doesn't cause it, all right? But it makes, when hoarding disorder kicks in, it makes it a lot more difficult for a solution. Mm-hmm. In fact, alcoholism or drug use is a deal breaker. Until that's dealt with, nothing else is going to work about anything, probably, in hoarding for sure. So when you went to mom's place, what you would think that would be preferable, and then that was intolerable. What was it about that was intolerable for you?
My dad was a very strict human. He liked to control everything, every aspect of his children's lives and anybody else around him. When I moved to my mother's, because it was under very stressful circumstances that I did move to mother's, she was very loosey-goosey. She liked to she thought children could kind of raise themselves, and she just let them out into the world. If you're a young child of a certain age and you're left with absolutely no guidance from having absolute guidance, I think that what happened to me was mother's house was very hoarded, and I didn't have anybody to talk to. By that time, my sister had moved away from my mother's house, and my brother hadn't moved into my mother's house yet. So I was left with my mother's hoarded environment with the expectation that I was going to be able to clean it.
Oh, boy.
So I was going to get that counter that was perpetually covered with stuff. I was going to get that as a young teenage confused child. I was going to get that tidied up for her, but I was also going to have to tell her where her things went when she came home. So if I did get a burst of, you know, interest in cleaning up, I would just, she would be very upset that the old teapot that was cracked and broken was not where it should be on the counter.
Okay.
So for me, I couldn't psychologically at that time deal with all of the anxieties my mother has, because she's bipolar and she was unstable for a lot of years mm-hmm. during my life. And so situations could flare very quickly.
Okay, and I would think unexpectedly, like not erratically.
Yeah, because you didn't know what was going to trigger the excitement over the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her bed was always loaded with clothes and books and things. And you know, you would go in and one of the chores was to make the bed, but how do you make the bed with all the stuff on the bed? And then if you move the stuff on the bed, then there was the blow up about
so
the stuff
like
being on the bed.
Choice.
Yeah. It was very difficult for me. And for me at that point, it was just easier to move out.
Okay. Rebecca, same question to you. How old were you when you left home, and what caused you to leave?
I was about 15 years old. My mother and I never really got along. So we just parted ways. I went and moved in with my father, which was probably a good thing, because then I saw what a normal household and relationship should be. So I was able to get that and use that in later life.
Okay. So we probably won't get a chance for both of you to answer this completely before we have to go to break, but I do want to start. Helen, what were the years in between like? So in between your first recollection of, there's a lot of stuff here, and no, this is intolerable. I've got to make another arrangement for myself and leave home.
In my earlier years, it was just normal. The people around me that my father would be around with, they also had what we called steel gardens, which was the accumulation of metal. The houses that we visited were very similar. And so I just thought for the first years, it was very normal. When it came to the later years, when I was starting to have problems with insecurity and with my need to speak out against things, I definitely went to my grandparents' place and I saw that there were other people that did things differently in my older years.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I really had a very hard time trying to justify to people that were on the bus, like when I was young, it was easier for me just to laugh with them. But as the kids got older and they got more cruel, it was me that was speaking up and getting into fights about the stuff that, you know, they shouldn't be saying about my father.
So you were trying to defend your parents?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And my sister would hide in the corner of the bus and my brother would start joking along with them. But I was that person that was, you know.
What about you, Rebecca? We have about 1 minute before we have to go to break.
At the younger ages, you feel like it's normal because everybody has different houses. They have different furniture. They have condos, apartments, houses, semi-detached. So you just think, oh, this is our normal. But in your teen years, you get very frustrated and annoyed because you know something's wrong, but you don't have the mental capacity to see beyond the mess. And you don't understand why is a piece of paper so important to you? Is it more important to you than me? Mm-hmm. And that's how it makes you feel when you're in that in-between stage where you understand more, but you don't understand enough about comorbid factors.
Okay. Actually, we have a little more time than I thought. So can you elaborate on that?
Well, in your
maybe some examples
early teen years, if, for example, your parent also was suffering from depression or anxiety, they do try and hide that from you. And you aren't emotionally mature enough to understand that those can be playing into this situation as well. And it's not as easy as just getting a garbage bag and throwing things out, because then there's such a loss and then the void needs to be filled with more and more and more. So you just don't understand at the early teen years. You're not mature enough.
Yeah, and it's a no-win situation too.
Yeah.
You know, you're stuck in it, it sounds. And you want to do something. You want to love and support your parent because you see they're distressed.
Exactly.
I mean, this doesn't happen without distress, right? And then if you try to help, it's not really help. Now it's going to precipitate a crisis, particularly with depression and anxiety and bipolar. You don't know what you're going to set off because that's a very labile, changeable, like what sets it off one time may not set it off the next time.
That's
as
exactly
much.
Yeah.
As much. And depression, it depends sort of where they are in the cycle, right? How did you deal with that kind of unpredictability? Because I think as kids, consistency and predictability are so key.
In my life, I believe the only consistent was unpredictability. Like, bedtimes were never the same. You never knew what you were going to do on this night or that night. So you learn to deal with going with the flow. But as you grow up, that isn't as great of a way to live because now you don't have that feeling of security, consistency, scheduling.
Absolutely. You told me, too, that one of the situations that occurred was you and your sibling were out and unsupervised. And what happened? Can you tell us about that?
Oh, we were very young.
How old?
I was 4 or 5, and then my sibling was 7 or 8. And we had to walk 3 kilometers to get to the location we were supposed to go after school because my mother wouldn't be home. And during that walk, being a 4 or 5 year old, my brother got ahead of me at a very major intersection. And I started to cry and I just ran and I got hit by a car. So it could have been a life-ending event. Thankfully, everything was pretty much okay. Mm-hmm. But those are the situations you deal with because my mother, for example, didn't want to be at home because she saw all the things and it was stressful and overwhelming. So she would prefer to be away from the house.
Absolutely.
But that left her young kids without supervision.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. Well, folks, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about what it took to get beyond this. So I hope to hear from you. I hope we have some more callers out there. And we will see you after the break.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
The
The Voice America Live Events page is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com.
This is Take Back Your Life When Your Things Are Taking Over. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. If you prefer, send an email to elaine.birchall@hoarding.ca. Now back to this week's show.
Welcome back, everyone. So in our last segment, we were talking to Helen and Rebecca, and we were talking about how complex their family situation was because one or both parents hoarded, even though if two parents hoarded, they hoarded differently, and so the repercussions for the child were different. And we're going to continue from there so that we can understand the parent hoarding, not as a bad parent who should just have cleaned up, but a complicated, complex, struggling individual like many of us are. None of us get into life or out of life without a struggle, like a major struggle. And that's you, me, and everybody else, folks, okay? So we don't want to come across as bad parent. I want to come across as the parent has their burdens and challenges, and they have children, and the children have a legacy from that, okay? So, Helen, let's start with you. What mental or physical issues did, I guess it's your mom first and then your dad, live with?
My mother was bipolar and an unstable bipolar person. She struggled quite a bit with being in and out of institutions, trying to hold it together. She later on became, of course, a single person again and then again. So she struggled quite a bit with staying stable.
Okay.
My father, he was an alcoholic. And he also had a very dominant personality, and he felt that what he felt was right and that nothing else besides what he felt was right.
Kind of my way and the highway.
He was very much that
okay.
man. And he was, my dad is also a very hyper person. My dad doesn't stand still for more than 15 minutes at a time, and he's moving around. So he was never diagnosed with anything. But I often felt that a part of the drinking was to try to
self-medicate,
take care of the hyperness.
Absolutely.
You know, so that kind of was my family.
Okay. We have a caller on hold, so maybe before we move to Rebecca, we can get our caller. Welcome, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
I have been listening intently, and sure enough, I have ended up coming from two sets of families, both of which were amazing hoarders.
Okay.
And my training was never to throw anything out. It was nigh on to a sin if something went out of the house and then you might need it again.
Oh, dear. Okay, I heard that a lot. Okay.
So, you know, then I get to, okay, here I am in my own developed, full-blown situation because mm-hmm. I've had no training to throw out anything.
Okay.
And I tend to go from all, like I'm going to chuck it all out, or nothing. I get frozen and I can't deal with it.
The all or nothing.
The all or nothing. Help.
Okay.
What do you do to get unstuck?
Well, I guess one of the things to start with is to try to appreciate that there are no perfect answers. So there's no right or wrong. There later on in one of the other shows, when we're talking about strategies, I'm going to coach people on the sorting and scaling process that I use to help them figure out of the things that are in front of them that they need to decide about because there are too many, what do they absolutely love? All right. And if you love it, you should keep it. And what really and truly's kind of got mixed up that really never was that important, you don't really love it, no matter whether it was a gift or not. And, you know, you don't need it either. Like, it isn't something you have an attachment to, but it's all got caught up in the jumble. And the things that become more difficult, Mary, are the things that are in the middle between the I absolutely love it and of course I absolutely need it, and those other things that are much easier to identify as excess to need. And if you take one of the prize things from the I love it pile and one of the things that is closer to the borderline of no, if anything has to go, it's going to be you. And you take those things and you test what's left against the pile in the middle that's difficult to decide. Keep the things that you love. Keep the things that you feel you absolutely need. And the other things, create another category in your mind, Mary, where you think, okay, I really don't want to let you go because you still have a lot of good in you. You know, you're the 500th thing that I'm keeping as a memory of somebody. But if I don't really like you, you're not really me today moving forward. You're somebody else, and I'm holding on to you for loyalty. So who would appreciate you? Where can I let you go to that fits with my ideas, values, and beliefs where you will be treasured and appreciated like I think you should be? And I guess that's kind of the shortcut to my scaling and sorting process. Does that help at all?
Yes, it does. It's tough to do.
It is. So one of the acid test questions to start with, all right, before I get back to Helen and Rebecca, is are you me? Are you who I am today moving forward? Or are you who I used to be in the past? And we all change. That's not my taste. That's not me today. And if it's not you today, moving forward toward minimizing the clutter, then what do you gain by holding on to it versus what do you lose? And I think if you ask those two questions, you'll start the process of realizing where it's going to come down, on which side of the line it's going to come down. You may not be able to let it go right away, but you've started to change your relationship to the thing, and that's so key. It's not about throwing things out and getting rid of things. It's about simplifying by changing your relationship to the things, and that should help you start that process.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Mary. Thank you for your call. So I was talking to Helen. Now I'd like to ask Rebecca. Rebecca, what were the mental and or physical health issues for, I guess it was your mom, was
mm-hmm.
it? Okay.
My mom was a single mother with two young kids, and I believe she suffers from anxiety, ADD. She also had a huge heart, and she was a giver and would volunteer all her time, but that would take away from time for herself in her house to be able to keep that in order. She was also a sucker for a sale or a bargain or a discount.
Okay. Do you think that was part of her belief system, or do you think that was part of a vulnerability because there aren't too many single parents who are affluent?
I think it was more the fact she had to live on a budget. So if she saw a sale, she would buy 20 of it, even though she didn't need it at that exact point. Maybe in the future she would need it, and now she got it for a cheaper price.
Okay. And did she actually use it before its expiry date?
Not very often.
No. Okay. And it uses up an awful lot of the volume of the budget to do that.
Exactly.
You'll be eating canned corn for a long time on 20 cans. You get pretty sick of canned corn. Okay. So what was the reaction of your other parent, Helen?
My parents ended up in a divorce.
Yeah. To your mom's hoarding. What was your dad's reaction?
My dad's reaction was more to my mother's mental health issues.
All right.
He couldn't stand that the inside of the house was untidy, even though the outside was untidy. And mom, as I said, was unstable. So she had to go into the hospital in Kingston and have some electric shock therapy. And my father couldn't deal because he had no control over that. I feel strongly that he wasn't able to control what my mother could say or would say at any given moment. And it just ended the relationship. My mother, on the other hand, has always been subservient to a dominant personality.
Okay.
And she's easily mowed over by a stronger personality.
Okay.
So for my mother, it was devastating, and her hoarding escalated as soon as she got out of the hospital. From that point on, she was just constantly hoarding. And I think it was because she just felt so alone and lonely, and nobody was guiding her like she needed, felt she needed to be guided.
And when she was hospitalized, did she have to reset up her home when she was out? Or was the home there, or the apartment there waiting for her set up? Did she lose everything every time she was hospitalized?
Every time.
Yeah, that would make it so much worse.
Yeah, so she would go into the hospital. She would have to find a place and have no belongings except for maybe a few clothes, and then try to build a house in whatever, like a boarding houses, or living with her mother, or, you know. So,
scratch all.
And that's very devastating.
Okay. And with you, Rebecca, what was that like for you?
My dad was very frustrated with the situation, and he was downright disgusted. For example, when we went over to his house to visit, we would have to change in the mudroom into clean clothes that didn't smell, and they would be washed right away, just because that lingering odor that was
the mustiness.
Yes, exactly. He did try and get custody, but it was in a time where fathers really didn't get custody. So we were left in the situation.
How often did you get to see your dad or stay with him as a relief?
In the beginning, it was every second weekend, but it was quite a nasty divorce. And when you're with one parent the whole time, you do pick up on things, and they say things maybe they shouldn't, and you get a feeling about the other parent, and you can choose not to go see them, which is what I did.
Okay.
However, now we have a great relationship, and it's flipped completely. So
yeah, that's great. That is great that your dad sustains you now.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have about 1 minute left. 30 seconds, actually. We're losing time as we speak. In a word, was anybody there for you? And if there was somebody, who was it?
I had two people in different stages. When I was little, it was a man named Bob, and he was a next-door neighbor. My uncle took over the father role when I was older.
Okay. And with you, Rebecca?
It was more school and teachers. It was the one thing you could go to, and it was safe, secure. You had a schedule every day, and you could excel if you worked really hard, and you could be the person you really wanted to be in the future.
You were meant to be. Yeah. Thank you so, so much. Well, we've run out of time, folks. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your questions, callers. And we'll see you next week. And we're going to talk about hoarding and crises. And watch the description of the show, because I have the best person I know to come and tell us everything we need to know about how hoarding can go wrong. Take care, everybody. See you next week.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Please join Elaine Birchall for another edition of Take Back Your Life When Your Things Are Taking Over next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help you declutter your home and your life again next week.